welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And New World Next Week is your independent media cucumber to the globalist cat, making him jump in the air and freak out and run away as we sneak up behind him with open source intel and our growing non-commercial community. And on that note, James, we'll begin this 250th episode of New World Next Week with cats. Website shows how easy it is to track you by your cat photos. This via the London Independent. A Florida professor created a website that highlights the issue of internet privacy by mapping pictures of cats posted on social media by their owners to within 8 meters using publicly accessible geographical location data, geolocation data. Owen Mundy, an art professor at Florida State University, has created I Know Where Your Cat Lives, which is part art project, part cute pictures, and part project to raise privacy issues. And it explores the effect of the explosion of data generated by people's online activity in their everyday lives. He notes the web economy has grown based completely on surveillance. And that's Professor Mundy. And he added that he wanted to find a way of raising awareness of how much data people were making publicly available, often without realizing it. And like so many things, it started out on a personal level. It was triggered several years ago when Professor Mundy found photographs of his then 3-year-old daughter on social media had included their location without him realizing it. Geographic data is sensitive, he said. A picture can only say so much. But if someone wants to do you harm or stalk you, or you live in a place where free speech is limited, anyone can track where you are. So using the internet phenomenon of cat pictures, he thought, would be the best way to raise awareness on how people were giving up their privacy online. So a quick search on Instagram showed that since 2010, 70 million photographs have been tagged with the word cat. So he just used the API, the application program interface, and he realized that anyone could gain access to the geographic coordinates of those photographs if the users had weak privacy settings. This wasn't just my problem. It was the millions of users of social media who didn't know. The I Know Where Your Cat Lives website launched in July of 2014 with only 1 million cat pictures, but it, of course, exploded. And for the past year, Mundy's been trying to write a program to sort of make it live and work on its own. The site now has 5.3 million cat pictures. James, in some ways, this reminds me of a story I covered many, many years ago on Media Monarchy called Please Rob Me, about how the oversharing world has shown just exactly what's going on. So there it is, James. Cats.
Exactly right. I mean, I hope people don't lose sight of the forest for the trees here. We often cover government tracking and surveillance, and that's certainly something that people should have in mind. But there's also just common garden variety criminals out there who, if they are tech savvy, can find ways to get at you and your family and know where you are and what you're doing, which may not be a good thing. I really do hope that our core audience is already familiar with issues like these, but having tools like these can be handy not only for yourself, but also for friends and family that you're concerned about who might not be savvy to these things. So I think it's a good idea. It's something simple that people can do to remind people of some of the dangers of just putting your life out there in the matrix willy-nilly. And so hats off to the people doing this and trying to raise that awareness.
Well, and I think what we've seen more as the years go by, too, is how many sort of apps update on their own and shift you back, and you have to go back in and find a way for you to opt out of something that they opted you in and never really told you about, because, of course, we all just say, agree to those terms and conditions. Now, James, as they say, if you're going to have one cat, you should have two cats, so I'll bust in a second cat story. And we did all Paris all last week, but, of course, the fallout continues, and we'll include links, James. As you've been covering this, you were on with Dan Dix on Press for Truth Live just a little while ago, and, of course, been covering the growing look of World War III. So one story on that note, Brussels lockdown, that's hashtag Brussels lockdown request for social media blackout prompts flood of cat pics. And that came in Brussels, a request from law enforcement not to tweet about the Brussels lockdown, the martial law earlier this week, prompted an incredible response as Belgians used the hashtag Brussels lockdown to tweet cat pictures and their funny cat photos, and it's all so silly. And that's what happens when you tell people, no, you're under attack, no, you're under martial law, we will keep you safe, even though we're the ones who've created all this terror in the first place. So I think if we go back to what Professor Owen Mundy was saying, you know, like if you live in a place where free speech might be curtailed. I think this is an interesting extra cat story to tie into that, James. So having said all that, and I wasn't able to display my own cat for you, she's running around. We'll move to our second story this week on New World Next Week. Number 250, as Congress passes the Space Mining Act of 2015 with no growth limits. So that begs the question, who owns space? And there is a not very happy about this article from phys.org. An event of cosmic proportions occurred on November 18th when the U.S. Congress passed the Space Act of 2015 into law. The legislation will give U.S. space firms the right to own and sell natural resources they mine from bodies in space, including asteroids. Although the act, passed with bipartisan support, still requires Barry Satoro's signature, it is already the most significant salvo that has been fired in the ideological battle over ownership of the cosmos. It goes against a number of treaties and international customary laws which already apply to the entire universe. The new law is nothing but a classic rendition of the "he who dares wins" philosophy of the Wild West. The act will also allow the private sector to make space innovations without regulatory oversight during an 8-year period and protect spaceflight participants from financial ruin. I'll think of what it's, you know, too space to fail. I'll work on that. Surely then this will see the private firms begin to incorporate the mining of asteroids into their investment plans. Supporters argue that the U.S. Space Act is a bold statement that finally sets private space flight free from the heavy regulation of the U.S. government. And the misdiagnosis begins here, again, as we're taking it from phys.org. Space exploration is a universal activity and therefore requires international regulation. The act represents a full frontal attack on settled principles of space law, which are based on two basic principles: the right of states to scientific exploration of outer space and its celestial bodies, and the prevention of unilateral and unbridled commercial exploitation of outer space resources. These principles are found in agreements including the Outer Space Treaty of 1967 and the Moon Agreement of 1979. The U.S. House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology denies there is anything in this act which violates the U.S.'s international obligations, James. According to this body, the right to extract and use resources from celestial bodies, quote, is affirmed by state practice and by the U.S. State Department in congressional testimony and written correspondence. So I've also got links to an article from What's Up With That that takes a much more positive view of that, but we'll leave that for everyone to read more for themselves in the show notes, as I'm sure we're all really familiar with the Outer Space Treaty of 1967 and the Moon Agreement of 1979. So we'll have to do more research into that. But James, space mining.
Well, I haven't even had a chance to read this new act, so I am not. I reserve right to do that before I comment on this in that respect. But let me take up the positive side of this. I haven't read the What's Up With That article either, so I'm going to have to come at this from my own perspective. But yeah, I think, let's keep in mind, governments hate competition. They love their monopolies. They hate competition. So NASA, the ESA, the JSA, the Chinese Space Agency, they all love to monopolize space and say, you know, you peons can't do anything with it without our say-so, without our rubber stamp. So this is a step in the opposite direction, and I think for the better. It's always better to have private entities competing with government. Having said that, obviously, I mean, there's questions about the weaponization of space, which I'm more worried about than people mining asteroids. I'm more concerned about how that's going to play out. And of course, that's, again, in the state monopoly context. So I don't know. If people are trying to claim an asteroid for themselves or something and no one else can come near it, that seems, but I don't know if that's what's contained in this act. So it all depends on the specifics of that. But if it's just about, you can go to an asteroid and take the whatever you know resource might be on it and bring it back to Earth, I don't see any particular problem with that.
I think that may be where it stands, and it's still that idea of, hey, if you're able to go do it and rock on, and whatever you're able to get out of that will be your spoils, you know, for the victor, if you will. And James, we were talking about this a little bit off mic, and I'll have to dig back into the archives, and like so many ways, I think we cover stories here, and again, we try and do it ahead of time, and then the years go by, and we're like, didn't we talk about that? Man, I swear we talked about landing on an asteroid on New World Next Week, but we'll have to dig through the archives and see for sure that we did actually cover that. But I think in a lot of ways, like James, you and I covered the drone explosion pretty much from the very beginning on this show, as far back as 2009. And now they are a ubiquitous part of life. They're plot lines in TV shows, and they are everywhere. So hopefully this kind of space mining story, James, in some ways might turn into something years later. We'll go, I think we talked about that. So having said that, James, I will move to our third and final story this week, and we call it hashtag good news next week. We've been giving you good news all through 2015, and the polls are in. More than 1 in 4 Americans believe government is the enemy. More than 1 in 4 Americans believe that the government is the enemy in a new Pew Research Center poll finding that 27% of registered voters say they think of government as an enemy. That's up 8% since 1996. The latest poll looked at general public opinion regarding the federal government, and we'll include all those links and the PDFs and the questionnaires and all those things are there, and there's other extra info in there that'll be interesting in just a moment. The findings suggest that 57% of voters feel frustrated with the government, while 22% feel angry, and 18% feel basically content. The majority of Americans feel the federal government has room for serious improvement, with 59% saying the government needs very major reform, and only 37% of voters felt that way in 97. When asked what particularly makes the government problematic, Congress and politics were cited most often. 13% mentioned Congress, while 11% mentioned politics. So more than a third, that's 35% of Republicans, believe the federal government is the enemy, and 34% of independents believe the federal government is the enemy. Meanwhile, the poll found that half of all Democrats view the government as a friend, and only 12% see it as the enemy. I find that would be really interesting, again, as you look through which phony party is in power and out of power and in favor and out of favor as the 4 or 8 years go by. So other findings include that few think the government is run for the benefit of all the people, and that it is viewed as wasteful and inefficient. About 3 in 4 Americans say the federal government is run by a few big interests, and 57% say the government is almost always wasteful and inefficient. So the PDF, the full thing from Pew Research, is called Beyond Distrust: How Americans View Their Government. James, there's an interesting side bit to this, because this is a pretty huge study and it is a lot to check out. The interesting part is most Americans deeply distrust their government, but are okay with almost all of its programs. They love every single bit of it, and they want to continue Big Daddy government taking care of them. That's the funny extra part of this not unmitigated good news story, James.
Well, there you go. That's the asterisk for this story, right? But, okay, well, 1 in 4 Americans think government is the enemy. We're 1/4 of the way there. But as you say, I mean, it really does. It's one of those things where you can show, literally, the government is the enemy. It is complicit in things like the 9/11 attacks and other grand terrorist incidents, killing its own population in order to further a political agenda. But you know, I like most of the things they do. I just wish it was nice people running it, without seeing the fundamental point of what government is and how it functions, how it has always functioned throughout history, how it always will, how 200 million people died at the hands of their own government in the last century alone. It is a force of evil, and the sooner people wake up to that, the better. But having said all of that, I guess it is a question of how you go about broaching this to people who are still in that system. And as you say, the Democrats are A-okay with government as long as their pal Barry Obama's in charge. But as soon as it's a Bush or whoever, suddenly it's the enemy again. And, oh, I hate everything about the government. And then it's flip and flip and flip over and over and over and over and over. It's a never-ending cycle until people actually realize that, no, the powers that you're handing to your dictator of preference are the powers that the dictator you don't like is going to have, too. Have you ever thought about that? It's a cycle. But I think this is a sign that it is, the alternative narrative is having an effect. It is seeping in. Can you imagine 50 years ago, 1 in 4 Americans believing the government was the enemy? That, I mean, would have been unthinkable back in that era. So it is a shift that's happening, and, you know, it's we're on the winning side of history. It's just a question of how long it takes to get there.
There you go. And of course, this poll is already being bandied about which phony running for presidential selection here in America. Oh, well, they'll be able to tap into the deep distrust against the government, as though, again, it's not a big phony show on the top on the federal level. So, James, having wrapped up our three main stories on this episode 250 of New World Next Week, and again, we've been giving you good news all through the year, and we'll ask you to submit good, positive stories using hashtag good news next week. But the classic hashtag New World Next Week, all the updates we can't fit into these episodes are supplied by everybody out there finding the news and finding the information and sharing it in one kind of easy to manage spot. So, James, the updates are kind of scary. Russian jet hit inside Syria after alleged incursion into Turkey. And I believe we laid it out pretty well here just a few months ago when we said U.S. allows ally Turkey to bomb the only group effectively fighting ISIS. That was back in August of this year. I think we laid out pretty well that Turkey was going to be well involved in the situation heating up involving Russia and Syria and the U.S. and all of that. Meanwhile, experts say ISIS parks its cash in Bitcoin. WeAreChange.org censored in France. Whistleblower claims drone pilots often high on drugs. And two last interesting articles, James. One from Zero Hedge. It's a fake America. And one from Lauren Coleman of the Copycat Effect on predicting terror. Of course, this is Thanksgiving. This is Black Friday. And Black Friday will be the two-week anniversary of the Paris attacks. And the copycat events tend to hit that mark. And I think with the nonstop paranoia being ramped up to a populace that, as we've discussed here for weeks in a row now, are already at a heightened emotional state and ready for the fear trap, I think the best thing we can say is don't fall for it. Lead with love, and I think we will make it. And we'll continue to keep doing this week after week. James, I know Thanksgiving is kind of a conquistador American thing, but I'll ask you and put you on the spot. What are you thankful for?
I'm thankful for people like yourself, not just because you're my friend, although you are, but also because of the exactly what you said there, leading with love. And if it isn't about love, and if it isn't about sharing and spreading the love that you have for fellow human beings, what is it about? And ultimately, that's what it always comes back to for me. And there are not a lot of people who put that in perspective, but I think you're one of them. So people like yourself and all the people out there who are like that, who are leading with love, my hat's off to all of you.
That's it. That's it. Our personal health, our personal family and friends, that's ultimately all of this, you know, sort of all the work, all the things. It all really comes down to that. And that's what we are all fighting for in all our different ways. And hopefully we will keep doing it, James. 250 episodes, my friend, has been a pleasure. And I hope for hundreds and hundreds more, buddy.
Me too. Let's do it again next week.
All right, man. Take care.